it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. The
Score! This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
This just in, Patrick Manelli.
Patrick Manelli, the longest tenured player in Chicago Bears history.
I want to thank the Bears organization for an incredible 16 years.
Score Football, pre- and post-game show co-host.
I hate to say it, but it feels like the same old Bears. And I was not hoping for an outcome like this where, you know, it just kind of rips your heart out. And that's what I felt like during this game, that it felt like you were in control. You're going against a rookie quarterback. He throws a pick six. Just the word for me, Chuck, is disappointed. I'm very, very disappointed in this outcome and in the way the Bears played in the second half.
He even has a signature beer.
Long Snapper IPA. The can, the artwork's me long snapping a ball on top of an El Camino. I have an El Camino, so the artwork's great. The beer's great.
Patrick Manelli with Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody on The Score.
Gotta wait for those two chords when you get the chance. This is Raheemian Harris on 670 The Score, and now joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today is our resident long snapper. And as Chuck Swirsky appropriately mentioned last night on the postgame show, the most tenured games of any Bear. It is Patrick Manelli. And unfortunately, Patrick, I feel like we've done a few late night Bears postgame shows as well. And we find ourselves in a similar position.
Yeah, I want to ask you guys, what year is this? Is this 2025 or is this 24, 23, 22, 21? It feels like a repeat of everything
2018.
That I've been doing. Yeah, there we go. Feels the same way, Grody. It was disappointing. And that opening, that's what it was. I mean, it started off great, right? They score on the first series. Caleb, you go back and watch that first series. Caleb, you know, was great with his legs. He wasn't great in the pocket. But shoot, they put up 7 points and they score on the opening drive. So you're excited. And to me, also, guys, the fans, that's what got me excited as well, to hear Soldier Field as loud as it was. I haven't heard that in a long, long time. And then the second half happens. And it felt like 24, 23, 22, 21, 2018. And it was just disappointing. And I think us as Bears fans had to build up all offseason with, you know, getting one of the top head coaches, if not the head number one head coach, potentially in Ben Johnson. And, you know, we built it up and it was going to be different. And it didn't feel like it.
I think for me, Patrick, watching the game and understanding that I wasn't expecting them to be good. We know that this is not a finished product when you talk about Caleb Booms. But because the same problems persist as we start a new year, that's where the concern comes in. And I'm looking at this specifically with him throwing beyond intermediate, let's say. How do you fix what I deem to be a very, very big problem from a Ben Johnson? I'm trying to design stuff, but we can't have a threat of a long ball.
Yeah, I don't know, because it looked the same, right? I mean, his incredible throw to Rome on the sideline in 3rd and 5, right? We saw those last year. They're wow throws. But then the wide open 4th and 2 throw to DJ, the missed Cole Kmet across the middle, that stuff a competent NFL quarterback should hit. And in those key situations, as being the number one pick in the draft, and that's why you draft him to make those throws, he's not doing it. So, Marshall, I'm a little disappointed. I go back to that word disappointed and maybe a little shocked that he hasn't improved as much as we had hoped. I mean, those are kind of layups for quarterbacks in the NFL to hit guys that wide open. And in those situations as well, where you want that guy to step up, and he talked about being Superman. That's when he needs to be Superman. That's kind of like just being a regular Superman, not making a terrific throw or out of the pocket throw or something that's just over the top. But I'm a little discouraged, a little worried about that we haven't seen a leap. I know it's game one, right? Everybody's going to overreact on game one, but I wanted to see something a little different. And to me, Caleb did not look that different. It looked like a carbon copy of a lot of the games later in the year last year.
All right. So, Patrick, I totally agree with you. I'm glad you brought up the crowd out there, because the pitch along the lakefront was just, it was great. And I genuinely,
Grody, I got goosebumps. Like, it reminded me back when we had our little heyday or whatever, that how loud that place can get. And it just, the fans freaking deserve it. That's the thing.
They do.
They deserve it. We deserve it. We all deserve it. And I thought that's what, I thought we turned the corner. I was like, oh, my gosh. All right. Ben Johnson, welcome to Chicago. You're putting points up on the board early. You're looking good. This is the Chicago crowd helping the defense as well. It was exciting. Sorry to jump in on your question there, but I got excited for that.
Don't be sad. We all thought it was wonderful to hear the fans. Yeah. They were staying loud. Olin was pumping them up. Like, you guys are in the right place on this.
Peanut Tillman is out there doing the Let's Go Bears thing live. I mean, usually they put the recording of him up on the board, and he's all pumped up, and I'm like, I had goosebumps too many times throughout that night with some of the nostalgia and some of just even seeing White Sox players there and Bulls players there. The community was there. Like, it was.
Hold on, I gotta bring this up, Grody. It started at the national anthem.
Yes,
Caleb
yes.
turns. I forgot who he turns to. He's like, "Who is that?" He had no idea who Jim Corneliusson is.
Oh,
like,
that's
the whole
sick.
Stands are going crazy, and he's amazing. Because when we played, and he would come out, we're like, "Oh man, this the team." We played Seattle, I think, one year in the playoffs, and he came out and sang the national anthem, and we knew all about, you know, the Blackhawks were in their heyday of how the crowd was going to react. And you could look across the side or across the field, and the Seahawks were all looking around. Like, Matt Hasselbeck was like, "What the heck is going on? And why is this the fans going nuts during the national anthem like this?" And it was kind of cool to see Caleb say, "What is it? Who is this guy? What's going on?" But that was
allowed?
The start of the fans, and I loved it. Yeah.
Are they allowed to cheer? That's exactly what I do. Like, that's so funny, Pat. You and I are right on the same page here today. I am enjoying this. I always look, when that happens, I always look at the opposing team's sideline to see how they react, because they got to be like,
they look like Caleb. They look like Caleb. Yes. Like, what is going on?
right. So here's the serious question, though, out of all of this. We're talking about Caleb Williams, and we're all expecting better. And if I asked a coach this question, of course they would say, yes, everything is fixable. Are the things that you're seeing from Caleb Williams, are those the types of things that are fixable?
You would think so. They seem like layups. That's what I call them, layups. They're just the easy throws across the middle, the crossing routes. And I'm guessing as a quarterback coach, you could maybe coach up some technique. I think you can talk to Tim Jenkins later today, right?
Yes.
You know, he'll have the better answer for that. But what is he doing technically wrong on that? Is he hurrying up the throw? Why is he sailing it? Why is he throwing it so far in front? I don't know. But to me, a competent quarterback should be able to make that throw. I don't care about the situation if it's fourth or two or what at first and 10, you still have to make that throw. So it is a simple throw, so I think it's fixable, but I think Tim will have the answer of why and how you could fix that a lot better than I can. But if you are the talent level of Caleb Williams, you should be able to fix that. I don't know why he is doing that, but that's the discouraging part to me, that he's missing the layups, and I just want to see him make those easy throws and become, you know, that pocket passer, the guy that can dissect the defense and make those easy throws.
Our segment with Patrick Manley is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today as we talk about the Bears season opener on Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody on The Score. I did not think, Patrick, that I would have to say to myself this morning, oh, good, special teams was a problem last night. We have the guy for this. And I hate that I have to talk to you about it. And I know that you don't want to talk about it either in that respect, because it means something went wrong on a unit where things shouldn't go wrong like that. But where do you begin? Was it the punt yardage they gave up? Marshall and I talked about that earlier. Was it the missed 50-yarder by Cairo Santos? You know, this was an incredible weekend when it came to the kicking game in the league. You saw people really extend the lengths that I think you thought kicks could go, made field goals. We saw the opposite in this game. And then obviously what happened at the end of the game, where they don't get the 2-minute timeout, because unfortunately it doesn't go through the end zone. Ben Johnson said the plan was, like, where do you begin talking about what happened yesterday on special teams?
That's a game when you walk in today with Richard Hightower as a special teamer and you've got your head down. You know you guys did not live up to the standard that you've set in that room. And you're right. It started with the punt team. I was disappointed. I think it was 17 yards of punt return they gave up, which is ridiculous. So is it Torrey Taylor out kicking the coverage? I want to go back and, like, kind of time his hang time and how far he's kicking it. Or is it guys getting held up at the line of scrimmage? Does he have to change some personnel up front who can release better and get off blocks better? I want to go back and study that more, but that's unacceptable. Anything over, you know, 6-7 yards, it's unacceptable as a punt team. You don't want that to happen. And four of them for 17 yards average, you know, that can flip the field. I mean, that's two first down basically for an offense. And that's not what you want to give up. So that's disappointing. So they need to go evaluate Torrey Taylor and his hang time, maybe he just needs to hit some sky kicks. So they're going 45 yards with a lot of hang time, and they're just fair catches. Instead of hitting 60-yarders and you're chasing the returner because maybe they don't have the players yet. We went through a season 1 year where we struggled on punt team because we had a bunch of new guys. And we kind of had to change our punt coverage a little bit where Brad Maynard had to hit more of a sky ball instead of us going down there and trying to, you know, hit a 50, 55-yarder and pinning him down there. But later on in the year, as guys got more comfortable and got more skins on the wall, they got to be better coverage players. So we could change that up a little bit. So that's number one. Number two, Cairo missing the 50-yarder. That's a tough kick at Soldier Field. I know people talk about somebody, I think a caller on Mullion Hall said a noodle leg. He didn't have a noodle leg. He hit it far enough to get there. He pushed it right. Both of them he pushed right. He looked like his swing was just that kind of way yesterday, that he was pushing everything a little bit right, and also the wind was blowing that way. And that hurt because you get the ball on the 40-yard line, so you're giving up more yards there. And as far as the end of the game, I misspoke in the post game. I was sitting there trying to write all my notes towards the end of the game, and I really wasn't paying attention that well. But, you know, to me, the breakdown comes Richard Hightower or the Carlos Polk, the assistant, goes to Cairo and says, hey, can you kick this out of the end zone? That's the first thing you got to ask. I don't know if they asked him that or not, but they probably – they obviously told him because Coach Johnson said they did. But you need to ask him, can you kick this thing out of the end zone? If he says no, then the discussion needs to be, hey, how do we deal with this, you know, two-minute warning? Do we just kick it out of bounds, give it to him at the 40, save an extra 40 seconds? That's a discussion that needs to happen. But if Cairo said, hey, I can kick it out of bounds, that's on him. And he's owning that today right now in meetings while they're going through the film and owning up to his teammates about that. So – that's something he should be able to do. An NFL kicker should be able to do that. Like I said, there was wind. I don't know how bad it was. But if he says on the sideline, I can kick it through the end zone, you've got to kick it through the end zone. And that could potentially change the outcome of the game. That gives you extra time. And that's one thing that they messed up on. But I love that Ben Johnson at the end of the game pointed the finger at himself. And some people said, I think Hall said it this morning, said they were back in the bus over Cairo. No, he was just stating the obvious. I think a coach, if he's doing that and stating the obvious, that's what you want. He's going to tell that. He's going to tell Cairo that in front of the team. He's going to tell the entire team, hey, we need this ball out of the end zone. So that's not backing the bus over him. That's just being honest with a player. And as a player, you just want honesty. You don't want stuff sugarcoated. You know he was supposed to kick it out of bounds. Everybody in that locker room would have heard that it was supposed to go out of bounds or through the end, or sorry, through the end zone. So I have no problem with Ben Johnson calling him out. But yeah, the special teams, they hurt the game. You don't want to be I don't want to be here talking about special teams after a game. That's a bad thing.
We lamented the return of Richard Hightower because it's not like his unit was great last year. Now, they did have that late season where they got the special teams touchdown. I was like, maybe that was the saving grace. I don't know. But I'm very interested to hear you describe that end-of-game conversation because Ben Johnson clearly thought his kicker was going to kick it out of the end zone. He thought he was capable, and I'm sure that conversation was had. I want to talk to you about Ben Johnson's decision-making in this game, whether it's the challenge that was terrible, whether it was the timeout usage, whether it was that end of game. What did you think of him as a head coach, and how much of this is just first-time head coach, first game, and maybe that's why he got out-coached as badly as he did by Kevin O'Connell?
Yeah, I think the challenge is debatable, right? Our guy Clay Harbor on Twitter said that was a fumble. So there's guys that are former players, former or analysts or whatever that – you know, maybe thought it was a right challenge. So you don't get it. So obviously it wasn't right. I, for the split second, thought maybe if he didn't touch him at all and he got the ball, that it is a fumble. So I didn't have a major problem with that. Obviously the game went differently in the fourth quarter, giving up 11 points. So you need that extra timeout. But if the game is kind of going like you were hoping, then it's not that big of a deal. And then what was your second part of that?
I'm just wondering your evaluation of Ben Johnson as a first-time head coach first game and all those decisions and how they kind of compounded.
I thought he did a fine job. I didn't think anything was egregious. I think the biggest thing we're talking about is that challenge. If that's what we're worried about, that's something that could – I don't know if it's 50-50 now looking at it, maybe 70-30 that it was he was down. But, you know, there's more to the game than that call. But I think overall I'm okay with it. And I love, too, in the post game, he comes right out and says, what, 56 seconds, that's what we were expecting if we kick it through the end zone and all that kind of stuff. So him analytically is there in the right headspace, and it seems like they are on the right page. And it's a breath of fresh air compared to what we've heard in the past from some other head coaches when they give their post game press conference where they really don't know what's going on. They got to kind of huddle together and be like, wait, what was I thinking? What was I doing? Where he came out there, and he got right to the point and said, this is what I was thinking. This is what I was expecting. So as far as game management, I was okay with it.
We're talking to Patrick Manley, the former Bear, here on Raheemian Harris with Mark Rohde on 670 The Score. This Sunday, join The Score in Circus Sports Illinois at Jarrett Payton's flagship on the Fox in St. Charles. Olin Cruz, Patrick, and Molly will host their pregame show there from 9 to noon. And then they have immediate reaction on the postgame show after Chicago takes on Detroit. That postgame show will be streamed exclusively on YouTube and Twitch because of the Cubs game. I know you guys represent on YouTube. That is this Sunday at Flagship on the Fox in St. Charles, sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be.
Patrick, the transformation, I guess I'll say, of J.J. McCarthy from the beginning of this game to the end of the game was something. Did he figure out how to be a quarterback, or did the Bears' defense just not adjust?
I think the defense didn't adjust. Kevin O'Connell's pretty special, right? I think he's a head coach in this league and known as one of the best coaches in the league for a reason. And I think J.J. stepped up. You know, I was excited in the first half. I was like, all right, pick six. He threw it to us. It was a great call by Dennis Allen that we were going to get lucky and get that young quarterback that was just going to be overtaken by the Soldier Field crowd, by Dennis Allen. But credit to Minnesota and them coming out in the second half and making adjustments. I thought the defense did not step up. I thought they gave up too many yards on the ground. Obviously, too many points with two touchdowns and a rushing touchdown by J.J., but I got to give that young man credit because at first, I was like, all right, we got one. This is going to be an easy win. He's flustered. He's not ready for this moment. But I said it last night. It looks like just one game, though. It looks like we got another good quarterback in this division, and that's not good for us Bears fans. So I just got to give him credit, and I think a lot has to go with Kevin O'Connell as well as the head coach.
Patrick, I think also whenever I talked to you a lot in the post game last year, you were a sign of not just, I think, optimism, but realism as well. Where are you just emotionally and mentally after one game with this?
Oh, man, I'm ticked.
How are you?
Yes.
I'm not good, to be honest with you, because I've been doing post-game what now for 12 years, pre and post for 12 years.
Really?
We've only had how many winnings? Yeah.
Wow.
How many winnings? It's just, it's getting depressing. It's hard to talk about a team that you love, that you live for, and you got to talk negatively. I mean, it's negatively because it's honest, and I want to be honest, but that's where I stand, Layla. It's disappointing. It's depressing. That's why I was so excited in the first half. I was like, all right, maybe we got something going here. And I can't wait to talk in the post game about winning and, you know, throw bouquets at players and all that stuff. And now you got to turn around and, you know, you got to hammer Caleb. You got to hammer just the defense. You've got to talk about special teams and how poorly they played. And it's depressing. So that's where I stand right now. But with my optimism, you talked about that. It is week one. And Lovey used to, I'll go back to Lovey, used to hammer into our head, the biggest improvement will be from week one to week two. And I think they can do that. With those 12 penalties, a lot of them are pre-snap. If the guys can really buckle down and figure that out, that'll make a difference. And then hopefully Caleb can take another step. But I'm disappointed, and I'm discouraged, but I'm hopeful. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think we all are.
Yeah, the one game factor is real.
I think that's a good way to look at it. So that's why I wanted to get your opinion. And here's the good news, everybody. You can still throw yourself a bouquet. It just has to be a six-pack of Long Snapper IPA.
There we go. That's right. Between your legs.
that takes extra talent.
I'm still learning how to do that one. At some point, that's what we should do. Just to get the ease off, instead of throwing bouquets at people, we should learn how to long snap beers. I'm not kidding. Yeah. I know it sounds a little dangerous. We just need to be around not a lot of people when we try.
Actually, let me give them a little plug real quick. I'm going to be putting something out on social media. There's a company I've joined with called SimGlass. It's an unbreakable glass.
Ooh.
I'm going to be putting stuff out on social media. You can buy them through, I think it's SimGlass.com. It has the Patrick Manley, it has Long Snapper IPA logo on it. And then all the proceeds, or most of the proceeds, are going to go to Bernie's Book Bank, which is close to my heart. But it'll be fun to see people trying to break this glass in different ways. And I've got a lot of NFL long snappers, former NFL long snappers, college long snappers are going to be out there on social media long snapping an unbreakable glass to see if they can break it. So it'll be fun to see what happens with this.
I love this. Tell us how it goes. We'll post the video as well. Patrick Manley, thanks again for another good therapy session here on the Midday Show. It's a yearly tradition.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right, we'll see you guys.
Hang in there, buddy.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
Poor Patrick. Can't they win one for Patrick? This is Raheemian Harris on 670 The Score with Mark Rohde. We have more coming up because, by the way, you are listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday on a Tuesday, presented by Busey Bank and Great Clips. And Plumbers 911, they know what's up. I always say, there is one thing that we are just undefeated as a country, just absolutely undefeated, plumbing. It's not even close. Like, we are the United States of plumbing. It's not even close. So I always shout out my plumbers. We have to go inside the locker room with Mark Grody next.
I always shout out my plumbers.
Dude, I do. It's in the arts.
Mark, I have a lot of respect
plumbing in the locker room
for plumbers. I just did not expect that today.
No, I respect plumbers every day. They are Victory Tuesday today, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. The messes that they got to clean up.
Oof. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Or, like, if you have a house with tree roots, oh, my goodness.
Tree roots. Oh, yeah.
Tree roots get into the... Oh, man.
I don't understand.
That's really where this comes from for me. But I just want to say, shout out to our plumbers, because you guys win every day. In the meantime, a brand new segment that you've never heard of, because we invented it in the pre-show meeting, is next. We go inside the Bears locker room with Mark Grody next on The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're back with more Inside the
Locker Room.
Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
It's perfect. I love it.
Mark Bruce, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Is Bruce going to be upset?
The AI locker room is just absolutely perfect. This is Raheem Ann Harris with Mark Grody. And the reason that the reason we did that is because you know a show called Inside the Clubhouse, which is completely different from Hit and Run. Those are two different shows, you know.
Well, isn't Hit and Run called the premier baseball show?
The premier baseball show in Chicago.
Yeah, I haven't heard the retort from Inside the Clubhouse on that. Are they also the premier?
Feel like they're above the fray. They don't need to even dip down to that.
They've been doing it longer.
If you're keeping track of the game at home called Raheem Ann Harris with Mark Grody, you note that Mark Grody decided to stir the pot at 11:29.
There was.
Marshall Harris issued a wild prediction at 10:48.
It was not a wild prediction. Grody's on board.
Well, you just said the clock is ticking, basically. Okay, like there's a point where if this keeps up, you can't take it anymore. And I'm saying AI.
And it's specific to his accuracy and ability to throw the ball down the field. And it's got to be a threat.
I will choose to go with what Patrick Manley says. It's fixable. That's why I asked him the question. I want to know, and I'll ask coaches this question. Is it fixable? And I want to hear yes, and then I'll have hope. So I'm not benching Caleb Williams after one game. But it's just some of the same things keep popping up.
Wait till you hear Tim Jenkins. I lost control of the show hours ago. So this is supposed to be the segment called Inside the Locker Room with Mark Grody. So you were there. You were at the Bears game yesterday. You were in the press box next to David Haw at Soldier Field.
I was.
You also were inside the locker room after the game. What is it that you want us to hear the most when it comes to priority number one for what you took away from your talks with the Bears?
Yes, quick note before I start this, Ray, if you get a chance, if you could please take some video of Jeff Tweedy, who is down the hallway doing a little concert right now, because that's just sick. I couldn't make my way down there.
Write that down. He's warming up. You could go in the next break.
Okay.
But you have to do this segment first. That's the rule.
Okay, so let me take you in the locker room. The first guy that you will hear from is one of the new Bears, Dio Dangbo, who did have some. He was very good early.
He finally popped.
Yeah, he had a
Marshall
sack.
Put the pressure on him, and he was like, "You got it, Marshall. Watch this."
We're talking about QB hits. We're talking about sacks. Yeah. We're talking about all the things that a down defensive lineman edge that you paid a lot of money, you want to see them do in game one.
Yes.
He took your coaching.
So if we're going to be dramatic after one game, I'll say that was a very good game. And so far, the projection on Dio Dangbo is good. He did have a couple of penalties, too. He joined the bandwagon. But here he was in the locker room. And my basic question is, what happened? What happened with the defense? Where was the energy?
What was the feeling on the sidelines when it kind of started to go sideways for you guys in this?
I think we let the energy get away a little bit too much. You know, kind of lost the crowd factor out of the game, and we weren't able to kind of sustain that energy and execution through the fourth quarter.
Do you know why?
I mean, it's hard to say. I got to go back and look at the tape. So
that was such a vet answer.
Yeah, but I appreciated him being forthright about the fact, because that's what it felt like. Like the energy was just on like this slow decline throughout the game, like after the first half, and especially in the fourth quarter.
Here's what I understand about what Dio said when he says he's got to look at the tape. It wasn't like a why did you get blocked or anything. It's like, why did the energy get sucked out from the fans, which you just told us it was the fans who went away. Didn't he live it firsthand? I don't understand how the tape is going to help him absorb that part.
I took it to mean the defense. Mark, I don't know how you felt.
Yeah. Like, and I think I am guessing what he is saying about looking at the tape is to see specifically where they went wrong, because where they went wrong led to the lack of energy that existed
in the crowd.
In the crowd. And look, like defenses run on adrenaline a lot of the time. They play to the crowd. They're the ones getting the crowd into the game at Soldier Field. And they were doing that in a big way last night. And they, for whatever reason, they just couldn't keep it up. That's what she said. So, like, there's lots of different possibilities on this that exist. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to talk to him later on in the week after watching the tape. Let's move on to Cole Kmet. And I think the tape will speak for itself here, just his impressions of this loss.
Cole, initial reaction to that game and obviously the way it ended up going.
Yeah, I mean, sucks for the outcome and the way it ended. Give credit to them that, you know, they played a better full game than we did. You know, obviously we had some opportunities there to kind of close it out, and we didn't do that. So we got to do a better job on that front.
Such a good first drive. You guys are playing well on offense. Defense is mm-hmm. playing well. But I guess from the offense perspective, mm-hmm. what happened?
I think our execution just has to be better. And when it comes down to those penalties, that's where we can – we can be better, more disciplined, and you know, that's us on play as players while we're out there, being on the same page and making sure we're executing. You know, and when you're falling behind the chains against a coordinator like that, against a defense like that, you're putting yourself in a pickle. I think in that first drive, we did a good job of staying ahead of the sticks, and we didn't do that there towards the end of the game.
So for Cole, I think it seems like the offense wasn't running anywhere near as efficiently after the first drive for the rest of the game, really. And that's where I take not issue necessarily, but like, what were you trying to do? It seems like they were trying to move the football forward, but like, what was your plan to do that? Because the runs were just kind of like, and then three yards.
What would you say you do here?
Yeah.
And while I do think Cole Kmet was a big factor in the game, I definitely thought some of his blocks were the reasons that even in the first drive, some of those plays were successful.
And a hell of a catch, too.
And like I said earlier, I feel like there were blocks where he was directly involved in scheme as far as pocket retention. Yeah, unfortunately, it came down to him on some of those plays. Like, there was one where he had an excellent block and somebody fell down, and Caleb Williams had a clear view for a passing lane that ended up being complete. So that's what you want to see. He ended up, Cole Kmet did, with four targets. He had an amazing one-handed catch for 31 yards. Colson Loveland had two targets. So together, that's six for the tight end group. But you do want to see more. Like, Colston had that little bobble there for one of his catches, but I thought it was still good to see him play, see him get in the mix in that first game. Cole Kmet, to me, sounds a little more calm and confident than what we heard from him last year as far as the team is concerned. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Cole's been around here so long now that it's gotten to the point where he's making the best of the situation, obviously, in terms of what he is saying about it, but he has seen a lot. As far as the tight ends are concerned, like, we all know that eventually that is something that Ben Johnson is going to expand. That's why they drafted Colston Loveland where they did. And, you know, they could have had Tyler Warren. Like, those were the two guys that they were debating over. It just, like, none of it is there yet in terms of what Ben Johnson really wants to do with this offense.
And he was very clear after the game, Ben Johnson, I'm saying, in that this is a game where the game plan was designed for the tight ends to be more involved in the running game than the passing game. The problem was the running game never really got off the ground.
I shall now take you back into the locker room, where as I walked towards the back of the locker room, I saw Grady Jarrett there, and he was talking about what they might have learned from this game.
Yeah, man, absolutely, you know, disappointed for sure. Got to, you know, close out when we got the opportunity to. But I think, you know, obviously when you're dealing with tough losses, so many lessons in it, you know. So a lot of things learn, get better from. We all would like a different outcome. Didn't go our way today, but luckily we get to see them again, you know. And that's a good football team. That's a good football team right there. And that's a way to open the season. And we've seen some things that we did well and things we can get better at. And so that's what I, you know, see. It's just a positives in the hurt, and I think there's a lot of things to learn from, but we definitely got to close out the game when we have the opportunity. You know, I can only speak with my experience here at the Chicago, and I look at it as there's a lot of good lessons to learn out this game. You know, I wouldn't say, you know, I think this is a good group of guys that want to win and do it, so I'm not even on the, as far as the, he will have better, you know, knowledge of that as far as learning how to win. I think we got a group of guys that want to win and do it hard, win a lot. So I think we're going to go back to work, and we're going to be positive about the things moving forward, and really just focus on where we're at right now. And I think that's all that matters, where we're at right now. And I think that should be the focus.
He sounds like somebody who knows that they have a lot to work on, but he doesn't sound like somebody who thinks it's a lost cause, especially when you consider how much of a veteran he is. I don't think that's window dressing out of Grady Jarrett.
No, and I think also he understands that, I think from his confidence level, that they can turn this around. It's not a lost cause. I think he's been around long enough to know when, oh, this isn't going to get any better. But with as many young players as they have, still first-year head coach, still first-year defensive coordinator in terms of being with this group of players, I think there was enough positive things that you could take away from this game to say, we build on this. And back to what Patrick Manley was talking about, when you talk about the greatest growth is from week one to week two, it's going to be very interesting knowing what we know about Detroit and how they looked against the Packers. Two very desperate teams trying to make sure they don't fall into an 0-2
desperate
hole.
Is a great word right there, Marshall. And it's funny, like Grady Jarrett last week, he was kind of telling us like weird things happen in week one. And he even said, like, I don't know if you use the exact words, but we all overreact. It's to wins or to losses and all of that. So that was the voice that I was hearing in there. The guy who is in his 11th year, I believe, in the National Football League, guy like that has seen a lot.
Yes, he has. And I think it's important that you got to talk to him. We have more from our news segment, Inside the Locker Room with Mark Grody here on Raheemy and Harris.
The premier locker room show.
Yes, it's the premier locker room show on The Score. It's also the premier baseball show. Ooh.
Yeah.
Shots fired.
Look at that. Whoa, Layla.
Why are you trying to get some trouble?
Am I rubbing off on you all of a sudden here? Like, you're starting to instigate stuff? Is that what's happening?
Starting?
Ah, yes. That's my Layla.
I also want to remind you, it's so good. I also want to remind you guys to leave a voicemail. Call our meatball machine. I was going to say text our meatball machine, but you're already doing that. That's just the text line. But we've gotten a lot of funny texts. We've gotten a lot of great comments on Twitch as well. Feel free to leave a voicemail on our meatball machine. It is our Odyssey app. Leave a voice message feature. We are playing the best of the best at 125. You won't want to miss it. More with Mark Grody coming up next on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So to make your life more complicated, this is now Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody.
Hey, how's it going?
Layla Raheemy, Marshall Harris with Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. The premier
locker room
show in Chicago, Inside the
Locker Room.
Now we're just trolling everybody. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score with Mark Grody as we wrap up a Bears game that, well, it just didn't end the way we wanted it to end. They lost 27-24 to the Vikings, and we are having a little bit of fun with our weekend baseball shows by trolling inside the clubhouse and hitting the run. Oh, yeah. Wait for it. Are we supposed to wait for the low brass? Is that how this works?
It's a venerable base locker room show.
I just don't know where it comes in the track.
Yes.
So this is a new segment we've debuted called Inside the Locker Room with Mark Grody because, well, he was inside the locker room.
That's
and
right.
And you have more for us from the Bears after the game.
Yes, we've heard from Dio Dangbo, Grady Jarrett, and Cole Kmet. Let's get another representative of the offense for the Bears and Rome Odunze being asked, what happened after that first drive? And everything looked so good. Rome.
Would it be fair to say that first drive is something you've really worked on, scripted, and then later things change, and that's part of the challenge of continuing to play well offensively?
That is a challenge in certain aspects. I don't think that was the case in this point. I think, you know, we had our plays. We were dialed in and, you know, executing regardless of what, if it was, you know, starters or any of the plays that we had on the play sheet. We were able to execute, but we just got to, you know, be able to execute it throughout an entire drive, you know. Can't have the, you know, mistakes that keep knocking us back and those different things. And so, yeah.
Man, Rome Odunze, 9 targets, 6 catches, 37 yards. And I know Caleb was trying to force the ball to Rome in a couple of different situations. I could say one out of those misses was probably catchable, but the rest were very difficult. Like, there were times where Rome was coming back, I feel like, to Caleb, where he was the one where the timing was more sound on his end, and then it was a matter of the timing of the throw. Like, I feel like their chemistry was still developing, even though I think he favored him more when it came to the targets. Like, Rome had the most targets out of every Bears receiver yesterday. Olamide Zaccheaus had 7, and then DJ Moore had 5.
What was concerning about it was the fact that, as you said, Layla, it's not, you know, the 6 catches is good. Less than 40 yards on the 6 catches, so that's coming out to 6.2 yards per catch, the 37 yards. That is not ideal, and that's got to be a lot better if this offense wants to move in the way that Ben Johnson has designed it. In fact, if you go up and down, the longs per player, his long was 17 yards, so that means he had 5 other catches for 20 yards. And then Zaccheaus, 16 was his long, and of course DJ Moore had the big one, the 30, and Cole Kmet with the one-handed grab for 31.
Well, but the longs aren't necessarily supposed to be. They do indicate a lack of taking a shot downfield, as we discussed, but it really had more to do with how it was designed, too. These are supposed to be yard after catch catches. And that was part of it, too, where if the yak in the rack isn't as much as you'd like it to be, which is what we're seeing, you know, that it sounds like they were getting to the place on the field where, unfortunately, the timing wasn't enough to where they weren't creating the space as what they needed to get the yards. Or there was an issue as far as either defensive coverages or what we were seeing in the pocket. I really think it goes back to what we were seeing out of the snap.
Yeah, and Caleb did get the ball to 8 different receivers on the day, and we've talked plenty about, I mean, it makes sense that you would want Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze to grow together, right? To be the number one target, to be the guy, considering where he's drafted, considering that he's under his rookie contract. But as I said yesterday, I think early on, and it kind of played out that way, that DJ Moore has to be your friend. He has to be your comfort because he knows, as Ben Johnson said about Braxton Jones, DJ Moore knows what he's doing out there. So that's the guy that's going to get the ball. He also had three rushes.
For eight yards.
Yeah, that would be a long of 5. You'll probably see more of that. Luther Burden III, the 1 catch, -3 yards. He did have a nice kick return of, I think it was 45 yards.
Yeah,
or right so. But, I mean, I thought that it was going to be slow early going for Luther Burden. It was something that we did talk about with Dan Weider on the Take the North podcast. Like, he was my prediction for the guy that everybody's going to be like, where's Luther Burden? And I do think some of that still goes back to what he missed in the offseason program, OTAs, rookie minicamp, all of that kind of stuff. I still think he's playing a little bit of catch-up. I think he could still be great. And we saw some of that athleticism on the kick return. But I do think it's going to take a while before he is fully trusted by Ben Johnson and even Caleb Williams to some degree.
Incorporating Luther Burden into the ball game is not my top priority when I'm still trying to figure out how to get the group of eight more than 21 catches overall. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I need DJ Moore to have more than three catches in this game. He did what he could with them. You know, Rome Odunze had six, but how were they utilized? Like, as we saw, what were you doing with those? Like, that was a bigger piece of it for me. And I think, again, also, because of all the way that these drives ended after the first touchdown drive, we're still talking about a Bears team that didn't run enough plays.
Yeah, I think when you look at the totals, it's stark contrast. J.J. McCarthy with only 20 attempts, right? And then understanding that McCarthy ends up with a couple of carries for 25 yards. The difference is Caleb Williams threw the ball 35 times, but there were really 41 pass plays out there. Because when he ran, it was not by design. It was six carries for 58 yards where he was on the move, scrambling, trying to make something happen off script.
Right, but if you're adding up 35 attempts plus 26 carries, then you're still 5 and 6 is 11. So therefore, you're still at like 61 plays there.
Oh yeah, it's 60. They ran 63 plays on offense in total. I think the biggest thing is, because you want the ball to be spread around, the distribution piece of it, I think that's going to be a game-by-game situation. And for DJ Moore, even though I don't agree with necessarily what those touches looked like, he did have three touches out of the backfield on carries. I don't know that it was what I was expecting, though.
Yeah, not necessarily. And yeah, look, you know, the jury is still out on DeAndre Swift as far as running the football is concerned. And Layla, you and I talked, though, I think you brought it up. The drive that ultimately ended with the Santos missed 50-yard field goal was so frustrating because you did have a bunch of DeAndre Swift on that drive. You had a 9-yarder from Swift on the ground. You had another carry from Swift of 12 yards on that. He plowed for 5 yards. And then you end up missing the hold on Darnell Wright, which was a bad call, the overthrow to Komet, which should have been a layup, and then a 2nd and 20 grounding, which leads to a missed 50-yard field goal. That had the beginnings of a good, you know, Ben Johnson run the ball and then pass when you have to drive, and then then he misses it. And so, to me, that's one of the most disappointing parts about the whole game.
The best carry of the game was that drive when he just powers for the 5 yards.
It was a great drive for Swift, and then the drive went flat.
That's what they said on the broadcast, too. It had to do with other issues as well on it, though. Again, I think the referees need to go back and look at that holding call, because that's good technique. That's just solid offensive lineman technique. Yeah. And they were having issues spotting the ball. Like, there was a lot of issues with that. But it's also the fact that what we are missing in this is Caleb Williams did the damn thing when it came to drawing a player off sides, too. Like, he finally got his count. It was cadence, motion, cadence, drawn offsides. So he gets the offsides call there, too, which is fantastic. That's something you definitely wanted to see. That was improvement. And then it was just issue after issue after issue. And then culminating with that missed field goal, the 50-yarder. And people are skeptical when it comes to momentum. But you can tell when another team knows the other team is, they've got them on their heels. You can tell during a game. And I think that was the point for the Vikings, where they really knew that they were able to strike, and they did so. They answer going down the field, 60 yards, 6 plays, 242, touchdown. And that's when they closed the gap at that point to 17-12, and we saw what happened afterward. Bears go 3 and out, they get another touchdown, and they take the lead. And that's momentum illustrated in a play-by-play.
And I'm literally looking around the press box for anybody who could explain it to me. I'm like, Haw, can you help me? Ruthie, somebody help me? What is happening? And everybody's like, Grody, you know what's happening here. You've seen this before. Stop acting like you ain't been here before. I'm like, yep, you're right. Bears.
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 So next is 5 on It, where we have 5 pressing questions. And we have to get to it's a major Cubs issue, actually. So we will do that next. More Bears talk as well. Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody next on The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.